Welcome to this Lydian Events podcast. In this podcast, you will be listening to the animal communication expert, Kirsty Lilith, and she's talking about her journey with whales. Kirsty shares her unique journey with the whales, which spans from working with the UK rivers to having the honour of swimming and talking with majestic humpback whales in Tahiti. Her work with the powerful humpback whale, Negual, involved working with the divine feminine and the divine masculine energies of the gear. So enjoy this wonderful talk. During the talk, Kirsty uses a projector and you will hear a fan noise temporarily while she demonstrates and shows some short pictures to her audience. Many thanks.
So thank you for joining me this afternoon. I wanted to share my journey with the whales. This has been going on, this journey, for about 22 months now. And so it's a privilege to be able to share my journey with them. Saying 22 months, if you go, this story actually started eons ago with this massively powerful cosmic being called Nagual, and myself, we made this soul agreement to come back in this lifetime to conduct this mission, to carry out this mission. And so that was eons ago. So fast forwarding now to this lifetime, and about 22 months ago, it was one night during the night, as you, just take a seat. As you know, a lot of these times stuff happens during the night because you're in that kind of space. And Mary Magdalene came to see me. I work with the divine feminine and the divine masculine. And Mary Magdalene came and she put these divine codes into my womb. And she spent most of the night working on that, and I knew that, and I've had it confirmed since, that these little, call them my little divine babies. And so I had these little codes in my womb. Didn't know any more than that. Me and my team operate on a need-to-know basis, and they most of the time don't think I need to know a lot of stuff. So I was okay with that. Didn't know it was then going to be connected to all of this. So July last year, I was sat in my room, and I had a visit from this humpback whale. This massive whale just suddenly appeared and he wanted to connect with me. And as he connected with me, he then showed me the globe and we were at the top, and then he showed me connecting with all these different groups of whales all across the whole world. And we were connected like webs of light going round, and all of them were singing in their different dialects to me. It was really emotional. I was just crying, and just the beauty and the magnificence of it and seeing all of that. He came back to me a couple of days later and said, I want you to come and find me. I want you to come and swim with me. So I said, okay then. I said, so you want me to find you in an entire ocean? And so he went, yes. And then off he went. And I thought, okay then. Not like setting up you for a challenge. So I then reached out to somebody that I knew in America, and I said, I've been, luckily she knows me, and said, a whale has contacted me, says I need to come find him, any clues? And she very kindly says, contact this woman. So she was called Celeste. So went on her website, and as I went on her website, she had this humpback whale that she works with called Nagual. And I went, oh my God, that's my whale. And he's this cosmic golden ray being who came down in 2014 to this planet, and she works with him quite a lot. And she was running a retreat in September this year. So last August, I booked onto the retreat, and then Nagual came and said that it is going to be like stepping stones. We have a journey to complete where it's going to culminate in. And he was in Tahiti, by the way, always the last place you look. And so he, that was where he was based. So this retreat was in Tahiti for 2 weeks in September. But he says, we've got a lot of work to do before we get to that point. And he said, I will guide you through and it will be like stepping stones. Shortly after that, Jesus came to see me. He's another being that I work with. And he said that it was connected with the work that Mary Magdalene had done with me. And it is connected with this journey with Nagual, that the end result of what we were working towards was when I was going to be in Tahiti in the Pacific Ocean with him. He was going to be a divine masculine vessel. I was going to be the divine feminine vessel. And by us coming together, I was going to birth the divine masculine back onto this planet. Because the divine masculine does not exist on this planet, hasn't done for millennia, and it's time for it to come back now. And the divine masculine has to be birthed through the divine feminine. And so at that point, I went, oh, okay then. Only a little kind of mission that we're doing. And me and my naivety, I said for months to everybody that would listen, that right inner circle, going, well, it's not just me, there's loads of people that are doing this kind of stuff. They wouldn't just rely on me, because that wouldn't be a very good plan. And I was quite... And I was quite happy with that. So then it was end of August last year. Spirit had me move location, and they had me move by the River Trent. And they said that is part of the work with Nagual. I then found out that the Trent is tidal. So it's connected, obviously, with all rivers connect to the ocean. But with it being tidal, it was much more connected with the ocean and with my work with Nagual. And since then, they've had me working with various water sources, various rivers across the UK. They had me in January going to Glastonbury, to the Chalice Well. A friend of mine in France, she was guided to take water from her river and go over to Glastonbury, and for me to do the same, get water from the Trent and then take that to Glastonbury. I went to the Trent. I don't know whether you've been to the Trent, and I'm looking, I'm thinking, there's no way I can get water from there. So you use all the tools to your devices. So I went and got my friend Isa, who is like a mountain goat. And I was out saying, can you go and get me some water? So I says, I'll watch out. I'll hold her gun in case you fall in. So she very kindly got me some water. So I took that to the Chalice Well, and we worked with the Chalice Well and the White Spring, which is the masculine and the feminine. And both of us brought our water sources together, and then we were also guided to take water back from both of those sources back to our locations. And so I did a water ceremony with the Trent and pouring in the sacred water from Glastonbury. I was also around about a similar time, was working with somebody at placing crystals in the Trent and in some of the waterways around Lincolnshire. So I was working with him, and he was guided of where we needed to go and place these crystals. And he then continued the work throughout this summer in various places on the UK. So that was, again, sort of like raising that vibration of the Trent. In March, I got guided to go to Julian's Bower, which is at the mouth of the Trent where it meets the Humber before it goes into the sea. So perhaps at that estuary, and it's this geometric shape. It's not smaller than this room. It's not very big. And it's got a path kind of around it in this geometric shape.
Pardon, sorry? Labyrinth.
Labyrinth, yeah, that's it. Yeah, labyrinth, thank you. And I went again with Isa, and we were guided to walk the path around this labyrinth to go round. And as soon as we stood on the edge, I was like, oh my God, I don't feel very well. It was just kind of pulling us in, and we both felt sick. Both had like, it was a band round our head. And the closer we got to the centre, the iller that we felt. I was clutching onto my tummy, and I think, oh my God, I'm going to lose my breakfast any minute. And even though when we got to the centre, we both just wanted to run straight out because the energy was that intense. But we just got told, just stand here, just in the light, and just allow it to go through. And it just dissipated as we were bringing the light through into the ground. the energy slowly kind of dissipated, and once it felt clear, we then did the same path back out again. And then we were asked to walk along the River Humber to where it meets the ocean, to kind of clear that path, to kind of go from the labyrinth out to that area. And that felt important, where the Trent met the ocean. And then during the year, I had various trips to, usually for shows or retreats and stuff, and wherever I was going, they were asking me to connect to the water, to the rivers, to the reservoirs, wherever I was going. And it was about cross-pollination, I was told, transferring codes from like the Trent via me to other rivers and then back again. So it was very much this networking of light that was being created using me as this divine vessel. And then also somebody was guided in the summer. She contacted me, a client of mine, and said that I had been told to give you this, make up this tincture for you. I've been to Mull and to Iona up in Scotland. And she says, I was guided to make this up and contact you because apparently you need this. So I was like, thank you very much. So when we met and exchanged this water, we did some work on the Fosdyke just outside Lincoln as well. So we were doing some work there. Somebody else, just before I went to Tahiti, she contacted me, or she arrived, and she says, I don't know why, but apparently I've got this water from the chalice well and I have to give it to you. So I ended up with these two, so I'm just going, thank you. Didn't know what they were for, but I just knew they were guided to share them with me. Started, I suppose, probably about a couple of months before I went to Tahiti, like leading up to September. I went through so much clearing, so much cleansing, so much releasing of like stuff from, I thought I'd done so much healing, but I had to be even lighter, even cleaner, even freer. And they took me through so many past lives, really intense stuff. And it just seemed to be continuous with working with the Lion's Gate, working with other portals, working with the full moon, the new moon. It was, I was exhausted. And I thought, my God, what's Tahiti going to be like if this is the build up to it? Because it was really, really intense. They, anything that could be released and let go of, that was it. It was like I had to be a sparkling little vessel to actually go on this this journey. All right, take some water. All right. Part of that time, as kind of happens, part of this healing bit is to look at yourself and look at your beliefs, look at kind of what is holding you back and what judgments that you maybe have about yourself. And one of the things that I had to own and accept, which was not easy, was the fact that I'd been telling people that there's loads of people doing this work and this mission. Apparently, no, all their eggs were in my basket. And that was, there was only me. And having to face that realisation and that overwhelming pressure, the overwhelming weight that I was carrying, once I had then realised that there was only me. And I'm thinking, what idiot would have just chosen me to do this? I'm thinking, my God, are they crazy? And so to accept that realisation that it was me, and then to carry that whole weight and that burden, I'm thinking, my God, what if I fail? What if I'm not enough? What if I screw it up? Because it was completely, well, at that point, I thought the trip was completely out of my comfort zone, and that was nothing compared to the reality of it. And so I had to work through all of that and let that go. And just go, it's okay. And I also worked a lot on, I get very travel sick, particularly seasick. So the fact of being on a boat for nearly 2 weeks was my idea of hell. And so I did quite a few EFT sessions to try and establish the cause of my travel sickness. And I knew it was sort of before I came to this planet. And so luckily, the woman I was working with was very open-minded. And we got back to sort of like the root causes, and I worked on that. Didn't know if it was going to work until I was actually on the boat. But I thought at least I'd done the best that I could to get myself, hopefully be able to survive the trip of being on the boat. So then came, and Nagual spent a lot of time with me leading up to the trip. He was like with me permanently, which was just beautiful. I turn over at night and then there was a massive whale right next to me in the bed. And he was just with me, working with me and the whole time. And it was lovely having that presence. When I was getting ready to go to Tahiti, because I was going to be away for 3 weeks, because with the travelling involved, the retreat itself was for 2 weeks, but then the travelling either side, it meant I was away for 3 weeks. So I was getting ready to go. And then Nagual came in as I was getting ready. And I'll never forget his words. He just went, "It is time to dance, you and I." And I was like, oh my goodness. It still gets me emotional when I think of that, because it was so powerful what he said. And he was with me throughout the whole journey to Tahiti. And it was phenomenal when I think it was phenomenal at the time when I couldn't kind of get my head around it, because I was flying from Heathrow. I went from Heathrow to LA and then LA to Tahiti. Arrived at Heathrow, and this is Terminal 3, one of the biggest airports, busiest airports in the whole world. And I'm looking, I'm thinking, where is everybody? And part of it's been a bomb scare, somebody told me. So I'm wandering through this airport, check my luggage in and stuff, and just, I could vaguely see people in the distance. But not, and I went through security, and as I stepped into like the security, and normally, as you know, there's crowds everywhere. I walked in, and I think there was two people, and literally, I walked them back out again, and I looked at the sign, and I thought, have I gone through the VIP section by mistake? And you know, it said security control, so I went through, and I'm thinking, well, this is just weird. And going into departures, I felt so. Felt like Moses. If I, wherever I went, people, there was nobody around me. And then it was like after I'd moved, people then came back. And I thought, they were really treating me as this sacred vessel that they didn't want people around me. Yeah, not to be contaminated. And it was amazing. And I felt like it was on one of those films, you know, where they had the headsets and go, "The eagle has arrived." It was like, "Move the crowd. Okay, she is now through here. You can bring the crowd back in." And it was just phenomenal how they treated me on the whole thing. And I hadn't been given any warning. I hadn't expected anything like that. But I have to say, on the lead up to the trip, I felt bulletproof. I felt that protected. I felt I could have gone on to a gun range and been fine. I literally felt like that. I was thinking, they ain't going to let anything happen to me. If I'm the only one that's doing this, they're going to protect me. It was amazing what happened. They'd clear motorways for me as I was driving. I don't know what they think of my driving skills, but they were keeping me so safe. And it was the same on that journey. They were with me kind of the whole time. And it's really hardcore, the long haul travel. I've not done that for a number of years. Until I was in my 20s would have been my last long haul. And I'd say it was pretty hardcore, having done 12 hours to get to LA, and I hadn't given it any thought, to get back on the plane and know you had another 9 hours in front of you. I was like, oh my goodness. But I survived, got to Tahiti okay, and I was asked to do a water ceremony when I arrived in Tahiti. It was on the 9/9 portal, so the 9th of September when I arrived, and got asked to do a water ceremony because I'd got asked to take the sacred water from the Scottish wells and the chalice well. And so I was armed with my sacred water, went down and did that, and I was asked to do the same when I got to the island of Moorea, which is a smaller island just off Tahiti. And that was where the retreat was going to be. So as I arrived on the Friday, the retreat started on the Sunday. So we took ferry journey across there, and Moorea was just stunning. The how you imagine these places to be, you know, with the teal blue water, absolutely gorgeous, and like the white sands, I've never been anywhere like it, and was just phenomenal. And so I did a water ceremony there again when I arrived, and actually got into water, only up to my ankles. I wasn't risking any further. And so that was kind of, yeah, just arriving, called in all the animal kingdom, connected to the whales, all the different, the orcas, the dolphins, all of that, and brought all of that energy in, which is what I'd been asked to do. I'm doing okay for time. I'm losing my voice. Then he gets to the start of the retreat, which is when it got interesting. We met as a group on the Sunday afternoon, and there was 12 of us in the group. There was Celeste, who was running it. There was her assistant, and then there was the 10 participants. And as you can probably tell, I don't kind of give a lot of thought to stuff. I chatted with people. I'd got my equipment that I needed. I had spoken to them. But apart from that, not really. And that became more apparent as I was listening to this woman. The assistant was saying, oh, we need to kind of give you just a bit of heads up of the retreat. And normally the things that I thought would have like made me hysterical didn't even like register on the scale. The boat was tiny. It only fitted 12 people on. So it was, if you imagine, 5 people sat side on either side and then 2 people at the front. And I'm thinking, there's no toilet. Whereas normally, I mean, I've got a weak bladder, that toilet priority. Well, the boat wasn't as, it was about as big as like this group of chairs here. And I'm thinking, my God, we're going out in the middle of the ocean in that. And I thought, it's okay. And then she was saying, right, it's going to be, it's really rough, the ocean, really strong currents. And I was thinking teal blue water, you know, nice and like calm. And then she said, also, you get dropped off a long way from the whales. So there's a long swim. I was nearly passing out at this point, and I'm thinking, keep your face straight, keep all your internal going, oh my God, I'm going to die. Because she said that they'll drop you as near as you can, but it can easily be half a mile to a mile swim. And I'm thinking, why the hell can't they drop you? So I just imagined, in my the bits that I did give thought to, they would go and park the boat just near the whales. I could get off, swim with the whales, get back on the boat. So very naive. And so it was a, and then she was saying, oh, and just to let you know, there's a lot of sharks in the area. She says, they're very aggressive, but don't let that bother you. And she was like, there's oceanics. She says, like, tiger sharks, hammerhead sharks. She was really off these. And I was like, what the hell? So she said, oh, just to be aware, just remember her, yeah. Her said, head on a swivel, head on. I was like, oh, my God. I thought, because to have be in the water, didn't have my glasses on, so I thought, what the hell could I see? Much of that. So that night, I have to say, oh my God, I cried most of the night. All these judgments came up about thinking, my God, I can't do this. I'm not enough. I've gone from couch potato to trying to be an Olympic swimmer. And all that berating yourself, all that judgment, all that harshness that we give ourselves is like, why didn't I think to go to the gym? Why didn't I think to swim before I went? Well, why didn't I think to do any of this stuff? But no, just like going, oh, I'm going to be fine. And realising I was going to be the liability of the group, that everybody else had been swimming for years. They'd been swimming with dolphins. Everyone knew Celeste. I was the only one that didn't. Been swimming with dolphins with her for years. A lot of them been swimming with whales for years. This was just like a walk in the park to them. And so I didn't get a lot of sleep that night. And I was thinking, no, you've got to man up. You've got to get on that boat. And so I did. I got on the boat. And then we're out in the middle of the ocean. And then, never forget this in my entire life, we'd seen the whales, which was amazing. We'd seen them on the air. We were kind of then getting prepared with it being the first trip. It wasn't anything speedy. Going, right, I can think about getting into the water now. Bear in mind, I'd been in contact with Celeste for over a year at this point. Just not loads of chit-chat, but, you know, the details that you need to know. Wasn't really on this planet, this woman, have to say. Lovely, beautiful soul that you'll ever meet. Not really here most of the time. So practicalities, not one of her strong point. But just absolutely beautiful and meant to be doing this work, which is why it was. She turned to me as we were kind of trying to get our kit on and ready, and then saying, oh, have you swam with whales before, Kirsty? It's quite nice. A little bit late to be asking me that, but I thought, fair enough. So I went, no. So she went, okay then. She said, oh, have you swam with dolphins before? No. And they were okay with that. And the assistant kind of joined. And everyone's now listening to this conversation. And then she went, so the assistant, Denise, she joined in. She says, have you swam in the ocean before? I went, no. And then they're like, everyone's all looking at each other at this point. But then the killer question was, that she says, have you been snorkeling before? I went, no. And you didn't have to be psychic to read every person's mind on that boat. They were thinking, what idiot flies halfway around the world to come swimming with whales and has not even been in the sodding ocean before? And I have to say, at that point, I agreed with them. And I thought, there is a line between bravery and stupidity, and I had well crossed it. And I did. I felt such an idiot. And I was thinking, oh my God, I can't get into the blooming water. What a huge thing. What the hell am I doing? What am I attempting to do? Because the challenge, one, getting my fins on, there were buggers to get on, buggers to get off. But I have to say, once they were on, they stayed, which was good. And I'm not coordinated on land. So put me on an ocean, on a boat that is literally doing this. And then I had to try and get my fins on to like the edge of the boat, which was luckily only a few strides away, but trying not to then go overboard at the same time. Then you had to sit on the side of the boat, which was about this kind of wide, and then you had a gap about this big to get your bum on and your legs and your fins over and then slide gently into the water while you were still doing all this. And then like, from a big drop, slide in, and then you had to then swim to wherever the whales were. And then my favourite bit was then the floating around, watching the whales swimming with them as they were going. That was the best bit. And then it was kind of trying to get back onto the boat. So it was, when it came to, when they go, okay, it's time to get back on the boat, I'd say to one of the people on the trip, right, which one's our boat? Because there was usually about four or something. Didn't have glasses on, was not going to waste any energy swimming towards the wrong boat. And then they go, that was it. And that was me. I was like, right, I'm here. That's the boat. I'm going for it. And then they'd put a ladder down, a metal ladder. I'd hang on to this ladder, being bashed into the side of this boat, trying to get these fins off and not drop them, because I don't think anyone was going to go down and get them for me. And then you had to hoist them up over the side of the boat and then try and get yourself up the ladder. And then I usually would nearly fall into the boat. And I was like, oh my God, that's me done. And because it came to, when it came to the call of like, oh, okay, right, it's time to, we're going in now. And we had a swim guide. I mean, as soon as his shirt came off, my fins were on, my mask and my snorkel, I was like ready, because I was so slow. And I was always off, the last off the boat, because when it came to the call going, okay, everyone can go in, it's like rats off a sinking ship, they were all gone. My Little Mermaid friends, they were off. And all this crap about when we're in the water, staying together as a group, all safety first, none of that. I could like see them in the distance. And I would be thinking, I'm sure that's them, that's my group. And I would just then just try, and usually my roommate and a couple of other people, we would be sort of like near the end, the others were gone. But I have to say, what got me through all of those days was, you know, sometimes when you have to have a mantra and you have to have this repeating around in your head. So my mantra was from one of the great spiritual gurus of our time, Disney Pixar, Finding Nemo. So every day in my head when I was on that boat, I had Marlon's voice going, are you going in? And I'm going, yep. What are you going to do? Just keep swimming. So that was it. Every time I was, just keep swimming. Because on that Monday, the first day on the boat, when I managed to get in, do a bit and then managed to get off, and I thought, oh my God. And I was so sick. I was thrown, and there's nowhere to throw up on the other side of the boat. I felt so ill, I thought I was going to die. And not being very spiritual, so I went, I hate you, Nagual. And I went, I am not setting foot on this boat again. I am not going through this, and I'm not going through on another boat in my lifetime. I said, you can find some other Muppet to do this. And that was it. I had it. And I got told you in the afternoon by my lot, there was me in my comfort zone. Then there was me being pushed way out of my comfort zone. Then there was me on this boat. And that was, and I thought, yeah, I can understand them. For me, this is huge and a huge challenge. And during the night, it came to me that I was perfectly entitled to not go back on the boat again, that I have free will, same as everybody has free will. And if I chose that I didn't want to go back on the boat, that was fine. But a couple of years ago, I handed my life over to the divine. I live my life by divine will, and whatever they want me to do, I do, and that is how I live my life. And as soon as I realised that, I went, I'm getting back on that boat, even if I have to throw up every single day when I'm on that boat. I am getting on that boat every day for the next 2 weeks. And so I set off on the Tuesday. Oh my God, the whales, it was amazing, the reception I got from them. If they could have had fireworks, they would have done. They were breaching up out of the water, just in massive celebration. Everybody else, their jaws were on the floor going, oh my God, we've never seen this before. And I was like, yes, thank you. And I was saying, thank you. And they're like, no, thank you. These whales were going, I'm going, no, thank you. And they're like, no, thank you. I'm saying, this is getting ridiculous. Enough for the thank yous. They were just so overjoyed that I'd made that decision and I was going to carry on with what I was here to do. And so it was meant I threw up on that Tuesday, but then on that Wednesday when I got on the boat and every day after, I surrendered to the ocean, I surrendered to her, I just let go and I allowed myself to be vulnerable in whatever way I had to, and I never threw up again, which was just a miracle. Didn't know that was going to happen until you get to the end of the retreat, but it was amazing. For the next remaining days, I never threw up again, which was just fantastic. The whales themselves were just amazing. As you know, all of you, when you're working with spirit, you're expected to move forward with working with them without getting the validation. And you're expected to be able to work with them and to walk through and walk on that path without expecting and needing that validation. But then the validation comes in when you're kind of like least expecting it. I got so much validation from that retreat, from the behaviour of the whales, mainly because all the people that I was with that swam with whales for years, none of them had seen the displays of behaviour that we did in those 2 weeks that I was there. And I knew that was for me to understand and get that validation that what I was doing was happening, and this it was real by them acting in different ways to what they would normally do. So that was just amazing. It was not expected, it was not anticipated, but it was very gratefully received, because I just knew what was that something special, something amazing was going on. And each morning I had my instructions from Nagual of what he wanted me to do when I got in the water. So I was so focused. Sharks didn't even come into existence. I thought, you can fend for yourselves. I thought, if you're going to come and attack me, come and attack me. But I've got, because I literally would see sharks swimming past. And then she was like, okay, we're off in the water now. I was like, okay then. And just got back into the boat one day. And somebody said, oh, do you think that group in there know they've got sharks circling them? And they did, like they had all the, I was like, oh, okay, thank God I'm back in here. They probably were shark circling when we were in there. But so that they were real, that threat. Didn't even focus. It was like, get off the boat, get from A to where the whales are, see the whales, get back on the boat, and then go on to your next. Well, because sometimes we'd have maybe about four drops while we were being on the boat. Sometimes it was just one or two, depending on how long we were in the water and what whales we saw. So as I got in, I was like, right, okay, when we got to the whales, Nagual was like, right, connect with the whales, connect with the orcas, connect with the dolphins, do, and I'm like, okay, do this, and I'm going, okay, and now we're all right. But that was my favourite bit, of just the floating on the water and seeing them either swimming underneath you or swimming around you. my favourite day was when we were swimming with a baby and his mummy and an escort whale. Apparently found out that a lot of mummy and babies get escorted by a male whale. And we had the very unusual, like never heard of practice, that a singer whale was escorting this mummy and her calf. And that was amazing, being in the water. We were with them for about an hour and a half swimming, and the vibrations, the frequencies from this singer whale coming through just reverberated through all of us. It was just amazing. And then seeing the mummy and the baby whale, it's brilliant if you can swim with the babies because they have to come up to the surface every 10 minutes. So they're quite near the surface. Mummy's further down. She only comes up every so often. And the baby whale, it swam right up in front of me, opened, oh, its chest was out, it swam up, and then it kind of came round. Its little eye was there, and it was, oh, my God, amazing. And with the baby whales, I mean, they were still massive. They were like the size of a big minibus to like a single-decker bus, that kind of size, and that was the baby. So they were not little, but some of them they were coming right up. And that was my best day, having that experience of being so close to the baby and being in the water so long with them, which was just phenomenal. Right. I need to pause. But as well as the highs, you also get the lows. I have to say the worst day for me, it was on the first week, I refer to it as shit show day, so sorry, but in the morning we were having an afternoon swim, so we're on the boat in the afternoon, and in the morning we'd gone to the sacred sites on the island. It was quite a small island, but it had these sacred sites which were connected with Avalon and Egypt. So we'd gone to these sites and I could, all these codes were like coming in from the land, and we were absorbing all of this, and I knew that we then had to take this to the ocean in the afternoon. And again, it was that cross of the energies, cross of the lights and stuff like that, all needed to be connected up. And it was crazy. When we got on the boat, the boat had nearly sunk in the morning. Apparently it all flooded. The engine was struggling to work, and I'm looking at the engine and the captain and thinking, oh my God, we're going out into the ocean and this thing was just not working very well. Eventually it decided it was working, went out. It was the roughest day that we'd had up to that point. It was something out of Perfect Storm. The waves, the current, and we came across these whales, and the captain dropped us really such the longest distance that he had from the whales before. So we got in and I must have swam nearly a mile. It was really, and I was just like, just keep swimming. And I had an eye on somebody that was there, my roommate, and we were just kept on going, got to the end, no bloody whale. They're gone by that point, that they'd already swum off. So then we got back onto the boat. I was exhausted. And then there was this woman got back on, really chirping, going, wasn't that a lovely swim? You know when you want to slap somebody and push them overboard? I was thinking, I'm nearly dying here. But luckily it was about 20 minutes, half an hour gap before the next drop. So I had a chance to relax and recuperate. Got in the second time, and again it was another long swim. And then part of the way, I just went, no, I cannot swim anymore. My energy is completely gone. I had nothing left. I couldn't see anybody. They'd all buggered off. The waves were like really strong. All I could see was like wave and then nothing. There was like nobody. And I just thought, no. I sent the, you know how most people, when it comes to sort of like dying and the end of the days, they start panicking. Most people, I do appreciate, would have had a complete panic attack in that water. Me, I just went, sharks, you can come get me. I've had it. And that was it. Nagual, he swooped in. I could feel him just come straight in. He went, not on my watch. And I was like, oh, okay. And I thought, yeah, whatever. and what I didn't realise until afterwards, our swim guide, he was a Moorean guy, a young fellow, but he was very connected with the whales, very psychically connected, didn't kind of really understand his connection. It was only when I was talking to somebody about it. She said, they were in the group, they were all together, they were only missing, like me, off somewhere else. And she said to Hiro, just all of a sudden, didn't say anything to anyone, just shot underwater and was gone like a bullet. And then all of a sudden he just surfaced up by me and then grabbed me and then pulled me all the way to sort of like the group. And then he kind of took me back, dragged me back on the boat because the whales had gone again by that point. And that was it. I just kind of managed to eventually kind of get her back on the boat and just had no energy at all. And I just lay on the bottom of the boat and I just left my body at that point. I thought, I can't. My poor little body was so traumatised. It was so exhausted, so knackered. But it just shows how quickly it wasn't how rough the sea was. But that was, as I say, was the worst day. It wasn't safe at all. But after that, they kind of learnt a little bit and we did stay a little bit more together as a group. And the rest of the trip went really well. And I said the highlight was swimming with Mummy and Baby and the singer whale, which was fantastic. And then when I arrived back, I got told that there was going to be 40-day integration period with everything that had happened with the whales, because the whales, I understood while I was out there why I was asked to do so much clearing and healing before I went, because the whales really trigger stuff in you. They work at a really deep level. And things that you didn't even know that you had to work on, or things that you weren't prepared to look at, they brought all that stuff up. Everybody on my retreat were having meltdowns. They were being triggered so much, and I was like the eye in the storm, watching everyone just lose it. And so I was pleased that they'd got me to work on all that stuff before, but there was still that integration of all the energy, because the whales, I say, work very much on a very deep level. And interestingly, the 40 days ends tomorrow. So I think that's no coincidence that like this, I'm here this weekend receiving whatever healing and stuff that I need for the end of that. And I got asked to, a week and a half ago, got to do a closing ceremony with the Trent and with Nagual. So I got asked to go to the Trent, a little humpback whale around my arm, as off we went and we did a closing ceremony, and that was like the end of my journey with the water, with the whales. And since I've got back, it feels very lonely without having a humpback whale next to you, because he's only just been popping in every now and again. And now that it's like our journey together is complete, our mission has been completed, and that is the end of our time together, which is amazing. So I just wanted to... not that you can probably see it very well on this screen, just show you just a couple of photos of, if I can get them working. I'm going to sleep now. It was working out, there it is. If I could get the thing further back, then it would, but the plug doesn't turn. Yeah, I was just thinking, I don't know whether there'd be any... Oh, that's brilliant, thank you. So... Fortunately, I don't know what, two of them came, so they... So that's going to the island of Moorea, as we were riding on the ferry, absolutely beautiful, stunning island. And it's only these two, I think, that have flipped up. They were put onto the stick correctly. And that just shows the teal blue water. Out in the ocean, it was nothing like that. You can actually see that kind of water. You can't see the where I was swimming. So that's my friend. That's the swim guide. That's the baby whale. So that shows kind of like the difference in the sizes between them. So that's Mummy and Baby. That's the Mummy coming up vertically, and Baby's on the top. It's one of the sunsets. Oh, that's the other one. That was just to show the can't really see very well. That's like the size of the boat. That was just half of it. So that was the tall. Just to prove it was me on the boat, I was there. And amongst all my little mermaid friends, that's a shark. But that's in the that was a friendly shark. That was in the more lagoon area, which is why you can see. And I swam with stingrays as well. That wasn't in the ocean bit. This was in a much lower depth water. That's one of my beautiful whales again. I didn't take these photos. We were very fortunate to have a photographer on board with us for two of the days, and he beautifully took these photos. That's mummy and baby again. See, I was too busy focused on surviving. That's him coming up, which is just beautiful. And then again, them in the water. The sheer grace and the magnificence of them was just stunning. I think that's the last one. I'll just see. Yeah. So, I just wanted to share those photos because that just kind of brings it to light, I suppose. So, does anybody have any questions that they have? Yes.
Did you birth your codes? Did everything go according to plan?
Yes, amazingly, it did. I didn't.
Mission achieved.
Yes, I didn't fail, which was just amazing. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. That was on the Wednesday of the first week. That was when I apparently we did that, and he showed us me energetically as us dancing. You know, like the Kundalini dance, that masculine and the feminine, and that's energetically what we were doing on that Wednesday. And then I got told in the second week I was working on balancing the feminine and the masculine energies in the collective, and to bring that up more into balance. So yes, thank goodness I achieved what I was supposed to. Has anybody else got any questions?
Do we all send healing out, healing energy out to the oceans or anything else around the world?
Are you on about you, like people in particular, sending?
Well, just like, you know, like whales are very spiritual creatures,
yeah.
And the energy and everything.
Yeah.
I just wonder if they have their own kind of energy that they send out.
They do. They say how they worked with people. They worked at a very deep level. I wouldn't advise going swimming with whales if you weren't prepared to kind of like work on your stuff. And they receive their energy from the cosmos, I suppose, from the universe. They swim, I don't know if this is in relation to your question, but they swim in relation to the moon cycles, which I found really fascinating, that they display different behaviours in the full moon and in the new moon. The new moon, they're much more active, they'll swim much more. In the full moon, they're very much in the receiving mode, and they will stay with you a lot longer because they're not swimming forward as much. So I was there for the equinox, and the whales told me they were receiving a lot of energy, a lot of healing energy, because they give out so much to us when it's real cosmic kind of energies that are coming in onto the planet. They'll go into receiving mode and they'll receive all this healing that they need for them to be able to continue doing the work that they have agreed to do, which is like to help us as well as their little whale lifetimes.
Divine masculine.
Mm-hmm.
Are our males going to change in our world? What's going to happen? Or is it just, like you said, it's about the balance of the masculine and the feminine, kind of equal, more of an equality thing? What is it, Kirsty?
From what I have been told, so my understanding of it, each of us has the masculine and the feminine energies. It's not a male and female. We each have our masculine and feminine, and what we're being asked to do is to balance that energy between us. The masculine energy is a doing energy. It's a very much an action-based, it's all strategy, planning, and just actually doing. A feminine is the receptive, the intuitive energy, the wisdom and going in flow in cycles. So it's balancing those two up within each and every one of us of when to actually move forward and do something and when to just sit and wait and just be receiving. And then we go into the divine bit where we actually connect with our divinity and bring in the divine feminine, the divine masculine into balance. And then in the males themselves, it's about them bringing, they're being asked to embody more of their feminine energy and bring that into balance, which is not always easy because for all of us, it's been a very patriarchal society for millennia now. So it's all been based on doing energy, being busy all the time, and that kind of energy. So to come back into getting that balance of receiving, it's not about being in the feminine and going completely to a matriarchal kind of society because nothing would get done. We'd all be just sitting there meditating and just waiting for things. So it's about getting that that balance. And that's what, but the divine masculine had to go through the divine feminine, I suppose, because the divine feminine has that creative bit, the same as we give birth to life. So that process was the same. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. Thank you.
Are there any more questions? No. So thank you so much, everybody, for coming to this talk and allowing me the privilege and the honour of sharing this journey.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Lizzian Events podcast. Kirsty's recording was made at the extremely busy Lincolnshire Wellbeing Show on the 5th of November 2022. Many thanks.